The sun was sinking behind the hills as they finally got off the Springham land. With an extra pack horse in tow and enough smoked and cured meat to keep them going for at least the next 3 weeks. Trader reined in his gelding and looked back, his face splitting into a broad grin.
What's so funny?
Close call.
When he called you old-timer, you mean? I thought you were gonna blow him clean out of his boots.
Nah, not that.
You mean that little guy watching us from the balcony of the house?
Getting warm, partner.
His grandfather, the one called Bart.
Getting positively hot, Ryan.
You said you knew him. What's his story?
An old story, John Dix.
It wasn't Comanche, was it, Trader?
Nah. Hell, I knew the name was familiar. But 30 years ago, Ryan.
You knew they thought it was Indians that did for this Bart Springham?
Sure. Well, didn't really sort of know it.
You could have gotten us all chilled there, Trader.
Dark night, all of us.
Slipped my memory. Common sort of name. You think I can remember every single man, woman, or child I ever sent over the Black River? Bart Springham. Yeah. Little feet off the Pecos. Had 3 men with him. Kids, to tell the truth. I always figured he had a taste for young boys. I came to his camp. He fed me. Had a beautiful Winchester repeater.
Which you went and stole. I heard that story a dozen times from you, Trader. Two of the boys spotted you sneaking out of the camp with a blaster.
Right. Use the rifle. 5 bullets to waste all 4 of them. Damned lovely gun, that Winchester. Silver inlay and engraved.
Oh, yeah, I remember that good old story, too, from the war wag times. You lost that blaster in a buffalo run the very next day, didn't you?
Trader held up a hand like he was sitting in a court of law.
As God is my witness, Abe, I cannot tell you a lie. Just the way it was.
And that was Bart Springham you murdered, Trader?
Ryan felt his own anger building.
And just because your memory is all fucked up, you let us ride straight into a potential shitstorm. Brilliant.
Nothing happened, Ryan.
More luck than judgment, wasn't it, Trader?
Nobody spoke for the next quarter hour. 2 nights later, in a desolate area, it seemed safe enough to camp without putting out a watch. The horses had been skittish all day, and there was no doubt in anyone's mind that they would give instant warning of anything or anybody approaching. They were at the bottom of a sheer-sided canyon, having picked their way down a steep trail that doubled back on itself like a brain-dead rattler. The river was fast flowing for most of its visible length, but the track came to it at a place where there was a stretch of shallows, making fording easy. The banks were wide enough at that point to drive a wag along them, though it looked as though they quickly narrowed downstream. There were scrub willows and a grove of slender aspens nearby. As evening closed down and the light faded, the animals became even more restless.
Could be a cougar around.
Or just the noise of the river.
Ryan had checked a little way around their campsite, but found no tracks of any predator. And with that wreck, they all retired and slept well. Ryan was dreaming. There had been some sort of ancient temple hewn from the living sandstone, with immense humanoid figures around its periphery that towered so high into the sky it made your neck hurt trying to look up at them. Priests in feathered headdresses carried short axes of black stone. Some of the men wore ornately carved masks of birds and lizards, with golden beaks and teeth. 28 columns stood around the site. Though he didn't know how he knew it, Ryan knew that they all had mystic and astrological alignment and significance. The mysterious name Aldebaran came to him. He thought that he had even heard what sounded like women screaming, but then he was abruptly awakened by the real cause of the noise.
The horses!
Ryan's eye flicked open. The moon was close to being full, hanging over the canyon, throwing everything into brilliant silver light and razored black shadows. He tried to sit up, seeing that the line of horses was totally freaked, rearing and kicking one another, their eyes rolling, froth dribbling from their bared teeth. But Ryan couldn't even sit up, fighting against the ground that was trembling, waves of movement shaking him.
Quake!
The air began to fill with dust and spray, and Ryan was chillingly aware that the whole of the huge canyon was folding in around them. It felt like the end of the world. The morning after the run-in with the giant muti cougar, Doc was in excellent spirits. He had left the place of death before breaking his fast, leading Judas out of the canyon onto a narrow trail that Jack had told him about, one that would take him higher into a region of clear streams and still lakes. The trail was lined with pinyon pines, their heavy scent filling the air as the sun rose to warm them. Twice he passed extensive alpine meadows, covered with an assortment of delicate wildflowers. Among them were carpets of the so-called Deathlands Daisy, with its fragile green stem and corona of white petals surrounding the golden heart. As Doc munched on an apple, washed down with a drink of crystal-clear water from a spring nearby, he was able to lie back on the cushioning grass and relax. Judas was tied securely to a lightning-blasted juniper a few paces away, munching contentedly.
If there is such a place on this blighted earth that might still seem to be the Garden of Eden, then this must come close.
Doc stretched out his thin legs, wincing at the creaking from his knees, looking at the cracked patina of dusty polish on his high boots.
I swear that my dear wife would not have tolerated such sartorial sloppiness. If it had been possible, Emily would have insisted that the sun wiped its feet before entering our front parlor.
He lobbed the core of the apple to Judas, who totally ignored it. Then Doc closed his eyes and thought back to the all-too-brief time of happiness. He remembered their fifth wedding anniversary, their last wedding anniversary, before the whitecoats from the future trawled him away forever. Jolyon had awakened them from his bassinet in the corner of their bedroom, insistent that it was past time for him to receive some sustenance. His mewling cries woke his sister Rachel, who had graduated to sleeping in her own little bed in the anteroom beyond the open door. She had climbed out in her nightdress, eyes blinking, rubbing at them with her pudgy fists.
"Something wrong, Mama?"
Emily had thrown back the coverlet with its simple, Amish design, allowing the child access to their bed.
"This 17th day of the month of June, in the year of our Lord, 1896, is most special to us, my chickadee. For it was on this day, 5 years since, that your papa and I pledged our troths to each other."
Rachel had wanted to know what that meant, and Emily Tanner, cradling baby Jolyon to her breast, had tried to explain to her the significance of the marital vows.
"It means that Papa and I will love each other and try to do what each other wants. And it doesn't matter whether we are in good health or whether we shall sometimes become a tiny bit poorly. For as long as we both shall live..."
"Won't you and Papa live forever?"
Doc remembered how the scarlet ribbons in Rachel's hair had bobbed and bounced as she'd asked that question. It was as clear in his memory as though it had only happened yesterday. Emily had squeezed his hand and kissed him gently on the cheek.
"Of course, my sweet angel. Papa and I intend to live forever."
"Forever. My own words 1,000 times.
Doc sat up abruptly and wiped away a tear that had trickled down his cheek.
Mustn't give way to this.
Doc stared, unseeing, across the beautiful land. The memories crowded in day and night, sleeping and waking. Yet life in the Deathlands with Ryan and the others tended to be somewhat hectic, not giving time for any serious, considered thoughts about what he should do.
"Dearest Emily..."
It was such a heavenly morning that Doc decided to forego the dubious delight of splitting his groin apart on Judas's serrated spine. He chose to walk, leading the mule by its bridle, picking his way along the pebbled trail. Judas had mixed feelings about this change of role. At first, the animal had seemed pleased with its burden-free day. Then, with its own singular perverseness, the mule decided that Doc was treating it badly. First it nipped at his hand, snagging its long yellow teeth on the sleeve of the faded frock coat. Doc virtually ignored the attack, brushing at the mule as though it were an importunate mosquito.
"Pray desist."
But the mule